Let me introduce Piotr Kosicki, who has been kind enough to come here to present on peace and the human person, foreign policy of the Polish Catholic Intelligentsia Clubs with France, Belgium, and West Germany in the 60s and 70s. And it is a great pleasure to have Piotr with us. He works normally, I should say, out of Princeton, although he's now based in Warsaw. He's one of these people who not only think a lot, but also travel a lot in terms of the work that he's doing. He is supposed to, I think, at least in part, to be based in Paris as well, where he's an adjunct professor at Sciences Po, Chateaubriand fellow at Sciences Po, and also doing bits and bobs at Warsaw University, or has been doing. And I know Piotr mostly from Princeton, and he's an historian who has an interest, broadly speaking, in the transnational effect of ideas and human encounters across, not just across borders, but across different sets of intellectual developments over time. I think that's the best way of putting it. A wonderful mix of an international and an intellectual historian. You're editing now, aren't you, a volume on the end of the Cold War on 1989, coming out of a conference that we had in Princeton about a year ago?
October.
Yeah. It seems longer than that ago. It was a very, very good conference that Piotr co-organized. So on that, without further ado, let us turn over to you, Piotr. Of course, we'll go around with the wine, and everyone can help themselves as Piotr is speaking. We're looking forward to listening to you tonight. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the kind invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. Now, the topic...
Yeah,
I'll wait for the wine.
Yes, have a sip before you get
here. Thanks. Now, the topic that I'm discussing today is... somewhat esoteric, but not really. And this is one of my goals for this evening, is to demonstrate that even though the title, Polish Catholic Intelligentsia Clubs, sounds like something that very few people might want to pick up off a bookshelf, it's worth doing so because it actually has a great deal to say. And I'm very grateful to Arne for the human encounters term, because that's very much at the heart of what I find interesting. And it's a difficult type of history to typologize in some ways, to the same extent that often you find in the documents, say, when you're dealing with the history of human encounters, I find that oral history, history of interior ministry, secret police, in the case of Poland, Bureau of Confessional Affairs, which was responsible for all religious organizations and for churches, as well as Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and then the specific archives of organizations and individuals. So it's a lot of material to mine. And the difference in perspective is truly just astounding at times. So it's interesting, I think, to engage certain terms like this foreign policy notion that is attributed by a specific document, but really reflects an entire language used by the Office of Confessional Affairs establishment to talk about a certain group of Polish Catholic intellectuals with international contacts from 1956, really until the end of the Cold War, although I'll explain in a moment why the title of my talk suggests that I should stop at 1978. Before I begin, though, I want to offer you three snapshots. I'm doing my best to pepper my dissertation with these because I find that they're actually quite effective in humanizing this notion so that I don't simply end up reducing the lives of the many intellectuals who pass through the story I'm telling to words like peace and personalism, which have certainly considerable moral and intellectual content on the one hand, but on the other can easily simply be fly into the wind and be reducible to propaganda. So, snapshot number one. On 6 July 1957, a wide-eyed 31-year-old wearing thin-rimmed glasses and speaking broken French arrived at the doorstep of Jean-Marie Domenech, esteemed editor-in-chief of the French monthly journal Esprit. The young man's name was Janusz Zabłocki, and it was his first trip outside Poland. He came to Dominac with a letter of introduction from a mutual friend and the task of enlisting Dominac's support for a new Polish Catholic monthly journal, later to be called Więź, that Zabłocki hoped to co-found in Warsaw, to be modeled on the French journal Esprit. Although this was not the only reason for Zabłocki's presence in France, this visit proved of a resounding success. He left the editorial offices of Esprit with an entire suitcase full of copies of the journal that he then transported back by train to Poland along with his colleagues. And in addition, a promise of continued correspondence and a pledge for exchange of articles between Esprit and the new journal that was to be created in Poland, Więź. Second snapshot. On 19 September 1963, a lean, 36-year-old, taciturn and chain-smoking deputy to the Polish parliament, coming from the same Więź journal, which by this time had been established and been up and running by 5 years, Tadeusz Mazowiecki came as a visitor to the International Federation of Christian Trade Unions in Brussels. The visitor was unknown personally to the host, Jan Kułakowski, who had managed to escape Poland in 1947, just before he was to have been imprisoned for his leadership role in the Polish Boy Scouts. And he had become a Belgian citizen and had risen up quickly through the ranks and become the Secretary General of the International Federation of Christian Trade Unions, the principal, one of the principal Christian trade unions in Europe. Although Mazowiecki was an MP of the People's Republic of Poland, and this in and of itself requires some explanation later, the latter, a political refugee from the very same state, they became instant friends, a bond that has lasted through the present day. Third snapshot, and I'll finish with this one before moving on to the substance of the talk. On August 8, 1972, Reinhold Lehmann, Secretary General of the International Pax Christi Peace Movement, made his first visit to the People's Republic of Poland. Having made the acquaintance of Polish underground hero and historian Władysław Bartoszewski, also a Catholic intellectual and journalist, Lehmann invited Bartoszewski to hold a series of seminars in the Federal Republic of Germany as a guest of Pax Christi. When the Polish Ministry of the Interior refused to issue Bartoszewski's passport to him so that he could leave Poland, Lehmann returned to Poland in the spring of 1973 to plead personally with a deputy minister of the Interior, with a positive outcome. Henceforth, Bartoszewski assumed the position of chair of the Auschwitz seminars held between Poles, Germans, and Jews, in part under the aegis of the Pax Christi German division. Now, just as a quick sidebar to update you on what happened later with each of these three individuals, all three Catholic journalists, the first two parliamentarians in the 1960s, all three involved in opposition activities. Following 1989, Zabłocki's career was over for reasons that I will explain in the coming minutes to you, due to internal divisions that had developed within the movement that I'm about which I'm speaking within Poland. Mazowiecki, in 1989, having been top counselor to Lech Wałęsa, becomes Prime Minister of Poland. As this actually is one of the tie-ins that I want to make in terms of why one should actually care about the Polish Catholic intelligentsia clubs. Martin Melia, in his book The Soviet Tragedy, this is just one example of throwaway references to Mazowiecki in books that touch on the end of the Cold War, mentions that Solidarity picked the social Christian Tadeusz Mazowiecki. The social Christian is the term used by Melia, without any real explanation of where that term comes from. Because in 1989, Mazowiecki has no formal identification with any Christian group, and his background is really unidentified. So there's something to be said as to what this actually means. It does have a substantive meaning for Mazowiecki's government, I would argue, beginning in 1989. But what I'm trying to do, among other things, is look at the milieu out of which these people and the ideas that they, decades later, would put into effect as members of social and political movements, what the roots of those ideas are. And Władysław Bartoszewski, who, to anyone who studies Polish history, is a very, very well-known figure, written several histories of the Warsaw Uprising, Righteous Among Nations, and he is currently counselor, special counselor to the Polish Prime Minister, responsible for Polish-German relations. So these are not trivial figures who nonetheless starred in movements that number no more than really the editorial board of Więź numbered around, or rather the entire staff of Więź numbered around 12 for the entire 20 years, first 20 years of its existence. It was a monthly founded in 1958. This is both Zabłocki and Mazowiecki's journal. Forgive me, I made this handout. I don't know if it's more of an aid or more of a nuisance, but I thought it might be useful to have a key of organizations to which you can refer, at the very least, so that you can remember what on earth I was talking about if you're not familiar with the Polish orthography. There are many more names on the front of the sheet than I will actually cover, simply due to time limitations. But there are more that I could give. Mazowiecki, Zabłocki, and Bartoszewski are all on here, as are their contacts, Domunak Lehmann and Kułakowski. And on the back, we have Więź, which in English is the bond.
So you even have a little star by Wojtyła. That can come out.
That will indeed come out later. Wojtyła is the reason why the end date of the talk needs to be 1978. Because 1978 drastically changes the nature of the Polish Catholic intellectual engagement in both domestic and international affairs. It's a change that had been coming for some time, possibly since 1968, arguably since the very genesis of the movement. But I want to leave that question for a bit later. More generally, though, I think it's important to touch on the general sociology of who these people are. The Polish Catholic Intelligentsia Clubs are founded under a slightly different name in the fall of 1956 in October with the rise of Władysław Gomułka, his rehabilitation and return to power as first secretary of the Polish United Workers' Party. And in the last 10 days of October, we have a renaissance for both the church and Catholic intellectuals. More specifically, the Polish primate, who had been essentially under house arrest, not house in the sense that he was imprisoned in the middle of nowhere in a small convent, was kept for 3 years under this arrest. And in the last 10 days of October 1956, he was released. At the same time, negotiations were taking place to reactivate two Catholic journals that had been active since the mid-1940s. The first is Tygodnik Powszechny, in which Bartoszewski would later serve as a journalist. Tygodnik Powszechny, in terms of the names on your list, is most connected to Jerzy Turowicz, who is a cultural icon, close friend of Czesław Miłosz. In fact, Miłosz cut his teeth in some ways in Poland as a close contact of the Tygodnik Powszechny milieu while it was still developing its nascent years. Each of these organizations that I list undergoes massive transformations. And again, I don't have time in this talk to give you an individual micro-history of each person and each organization. But I do have to talk about them all together because they are all connected and because the people move back and forth internally within Poland among these groups. And then at the international, when the international dimension is added, there is truly an exchange, a regular exchange, and a massive flow of information taking place, both in the form of private correspondence and people traveling, whether by train regularly back and forth between Warsaw and Kraków, or Warsaw and Wrocław, or Kraków and Toruń, or Poznań and Wrocław, or also often by train, but sometimes by airplane as well, between Warsaw and Paris, or Warsaw and London, or Warsaw and Florence, or Kraków and Bonn. It is important to keep in mind that there is a great deal going on. So one of the questions I'm going to pose at the end, which perhaps you can aid me, is whether you think the term network is appropriate here, because it's a question that I've struggled with. Anytime one talks about this kind of phenomenon, where there are a lot of people involved in numerous organizations, some of which overlap, a lot of which have both domestic and international connections, moving back and forth, exchanging ideas back and forth. Is that enough, sufficient, to constitute a network? I use the term foreign policy in scare quotes in the title, and I mentioned earlier that this is representative of the language used in the mid to late 1960s by the Polish Bureau of Confessional Affairs, which was technically subordinate to the Polish government, but in practice, the minister responsible, minister-director responsible for the bureau was in fact directly answerable to the first secretary of the party and the central committee. This language was a distinct difference from what had begun in 1956. So in October of 1956, two journals, Tygodnik Powszechny and Znak, that had been founded in the mid-1940s, reactivated. There is some discussion that a younger generation of Polish Catholic intellectuals, this generation includes Mazowiecki and Zabłocki. These are individuals who, for the most part, have come out of an organization called BACS, which was, I don't want to be too simplistic here, but essentially a group, part of the leadership consisted of ex-fascists from pre-interwar Poland who had managed to transform themselves into collaborationist Catholics by the late 1940s. And they had essentially in the late 1940s, early 1950s constituted the only entry point for Catholic and young Catholic intellectuals wanting to do really anything, read, publish, travel, this was it. So the connotations with the history are often quite bad, and a number of the intellectuals, particularly Mazowiecki, wrote things of which they later were quite ashamed. But this is the root of the younger generation's engagement. And there is some generational tension between the older Tygodnik Powszechny and Znak generation and the younger Więź generation. But for the most part, when it comes to international contacts, they work together. They play first chair in different situations, but we're talking about the same group here. And also, in 1957, this is going to be a sidebar to the specifics of the international contacts, but it is worth keeping in mind. I mentioned that Tadeusz Mazowiecki went abroad as a Polish parliamentary deputy. In 1957, the first elections to follow the Polish October, there was announced an entry for several Catholic intellectual candidates. No Christian party to be created in Poland, but a so-called parliamentary circle would be permitted. These were candidates who were independent of the Stalinist-associated or Stalinist-tinged PACs, who were allowed to constitute their own influence on policy. One of the conditions, and this was actually said in writing with the creation of the circle, was that there would never be any attempt to create a Christian political party in the People's Republic of Poland. This group essentially assembled the leadership of the entire movement. The movement is variously called either the Znak movement or the KIK movement. KIK for acronym of Klub Inteligencji Katolickiej, so Catholic Intelligentsia Clubs in Polish. And these deputies were able to get passports far more easily than the rank and file members of their organizations because they were deputies. So at the same time, you know, it's odd to talk about foreign policy for an organization that has absolutely nothing to say in terms of the official discourse of a regime. But when there's a point of intersection between the leadership positions of a given movement and the official representative or presumed representative or so-called representative body of a socialist regime, then there are certain questions to be asked about politicization. And this brings me to the principal point that I would like to make, which will lead me to a quick run through some of the international contacts of the Catholic Intelligentsia Club movement. Namely, is it fair to apply political language or to presume political intent or political activity to these individuals. By the mid-1960s, the tide had largely turned, begun to turn against these clubs. Between 1956 and 1962 or 63, they were able to send about 100 members a year abroad. It's a pretty striking number, given that the entire movement never numbered more than 500. Quite often the same people, year in and year out, were able to travel abroad. Granted, some people were consistently refused passports. I won't go into details with names, but there was an evaluation each time. There would be interviews with Interior Ministry officials who would decide whether or not to release passports. And regardless, the movement would have to submit a plan or a program to the Bureau of Confessional Affairs that I mentioned previously. That Bureau would then have to approve. In other words, the Central Committee, in principle, could have some say over what the elements represented abroad by Polish Catholic intellectuals would be. And this is not an exaggeration. The leader of the Polish, of the Znak Parliamentary Circle, Jerzy Zawiejski, who's on your list, the last under Poland, was a personal friend of Gomułka, and he was also a personal pre-war friend of Stefan Wyszyński, who's the primate who came back from the house arrest in 1956 and continued as primate of Poland until 1981. For the first few years of Gomułka's rule as first secretary, it was this Catholic intellectual, Jerzy Zawiejski, a de facto leader of the Znak movement, president of the Warsaw Catholic Intellectuals Club, or Intelligentsia Club, who was the principal mediator between the cardinal primate and the first secretary of the Polish United Workers' Party. So there is a significant amount of give and take engaged here. Now, broader question once again. I use the word sometimes without thinking, because I've gotten so used to reading it, engagement, with respect. It comes directly from many of the French texts that the members of the Catholic Intelligentsia Club were reading, most especially the author Emmanuel Mounier, about whom I'll say a few more words in a moment. Engagement, the engagé. Emmanuel Mounier, I could cite at length, but that would take us down different avenues that we wouldn't want to necessarily traverse, wrote at length about the désordre établi, the established disorder that he perceived in France in the 1930s. The older generation of the Polish Catholic Intelligentsia Clubs, before World War II, came into contact either with smuggled translations or in Paris, for some of them, those who were old enough to travel abroad prior to World War II, of works by this French author. And if you've never heard of the author, you're not alone. Very few people have read Emmanuel Mounier. Very little of his work has even been translated into English. But during World War II, in the resistance movement, there were three translations circulating of the Manifest in the Service of Personalism, written by Mounier in 1936. Mounier was a disciple of Jacques Maritain, a well-known French philosopher who became the first ambassador to the Vatican from France following World War II, and one of the principal, thinkers inspiring Christian democratic politics in Europe, in Western Europe, after World War II. Mounier shifted first to the left, then to the right, and then to the left again, moving away from Maritain. But what is interesting here is that the way that these Polish Catholic intellectuals perceived what was taking place in Poland, more generally behind the Iron Curtain, mapped directly onto what they perceived as Mounier's critique, and through Mounier also Maritain's critique, of France in the 1930s. And not just France, but more generally the interwar bourgeois capitalist order. And this dialogue between Western Europe in the 1930s and Eastern Europe in the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s is seminal to understand what's going on when it comes to social and political protest then and later on the part of these individuals. Because there is a disjunction in terms of the temporality with these two groups. In 1956, the Polish Catholic Intelligentsia Club members begin to travel abroad. Zabłocki gets to meet with Jean-Marie Dominak, who is the successor of Emmanuel Mounier at Esprit, because Mounier died at a very young age in 1950. And something that is striking to him, but that I found particularly striking reading Dominak's correspondence from the early 1950s through the late 1960s, is that what begins as a mentorship where the Poles are relying on the French quickly turns into the French trying to play catch-up with the Poles whenever the Poles are actually able to get a letter through, or whenever one of these Catholic intellectuals comes and visits the editorial offices of Esprit in Paris. Simply because the journal Esprit, which is remade in the late 1940s to be leftist without being Stalinist, quite quickly finds itself one, if not more, steps behind the actual events in Eastern Europe. So, for example, Esprit loves Pax. Loves Pax. Personally, Dominak, who actually came to Poland three times in the early 1950s, thought that the ex-fascist founder of Pax, Bolesław Piasecki, was a bit of a shady guy, is his word. But the young generation within Pax really seemed very attractive to him. Mounier himself went to Poland in 1946 and loved meeting with the younger folk of Pax. So a number of people who leave Pax just before the events of October 1956 and who helped to found this Catholic Intelligentsia Club movement have in some ways the direct imprimatur of Esprit and are anointed as the chosen, our people in Eastern Europe, if you will, so that often you will find in the 1950s, well, essentially through the fall of the collapse of the Iron Curtain, texts appearing at least once a year from at least one member of the Polish Catholic Intelligentsia Club movement in Esprit. But if you were to read the correspondence, you will find is that Dominak very often ends up apologizing to the people on the other side, of the recipients of his letters. So, for example, I have a name Andrzej Krasiński written here, who is actually Janusz Zabłocki's contact from my first snapshot. This is the man who put Zabłocki in touch with Dominak. Krasiński had been in Pax. He left Pax right before October 1956. He was one of the co-founders of Więź. He became very close with Dominak. Dominak came to receive a prize from Pax in Poland in 1954, and Krasiński took Dominak and his family to the mountains, to the Tatras, and then to the Baltic Sea, to enjoy the summer sun. And they became quite close. What the correspondence between them shows is that as Dominak begins to see that Pax is doing things that counter the spirit of what he perceives to be a certain Catholic ethos, Dominak says, "Oops, we always believed in you individuals, even if we didn't always agree with every single move that Pax was making." There are any number of instances of cautionary language like that in the correspondence. I don't want to get into too much detail with that, but I do want to illustrate that if we're talking about a foreign policy, or even if we're talking about a political consciousness of sorts, it's very difficult to attribute it in unequivocal terms the way that the Bureau of Confessional Affairs does to the Kik movement in 1967, because it's not entirely clear if the partners in conversation between West and East are seeing eye to eye. Now, this is, of course, different in different cases with different goals. The first part of my title for the talk, Peace in the Human Person, points to the fact that there was a spectrum of goals on which people could agree or disagree to greater or lesser extent. The human person is a term derived from Maritain. And this is also the term on which the notion of personalism is based. Personalism being a rough, very, very broad school of thought to which both Marita and Mounir are attributed, and to which essentially all of the people covered in my talk, whether in Poland or in Western Europe, would, to a greater or lesser extent, ascribe themselves. Some of the groups in Western Europe to which the Poles seek out immediately after 1956 explicitly say in their founding charters, we are disciples of Emmanuel Mounier. In France, this is obviously Esprit, which Mounier founded. This is the journalistic network Information Catholique Internationale. I neglected to put its founder on the sheet. I apologize. Georges Routin. If you have any questions about them, I'm happy to field them later on. We can chat about that. A group which is quite different, actually, than most of the others, and which will lead me to underscore a question mark for the term intelligentsia in the name of the Kik movement, which is La Vie Nouvelle, which is a group of essentially young, burgeoning, middle-class families in France, a network throughout France, both large cities and small, that organizes beginning in, it's founded in 1945, or it's connected quite closely to the Dominican order in France, and beginning in the late 1950s, organizes regular so-called voyage d'études, study trips, to Eastern Europe. And this includes the USSR on several occasions in the 1960s. But these are individuals who say, and this maps onto some of the language used by the Catholic intellectuals in Poland, we believe that socialism is the optimal order within which to live according to the precepts of the Christian faith. There's a quote from Konstantin Lubieński, who's becomes one of the deputies of the Znak Circle in the 1960s, from 1948. Quote, socialism is the most perfect form of the temporal order in which to live as a Christian. This is one of the tenets for all of these groups. Now, when we get to the German part of these contexts, the context is going to shift. But this is the beginning. So this is before Vatican II, before 1962, while the Catholic Church is still is not yet modern, if you will, going by sort of conventional interpretations of the changes wrought by the Second Vatican Council. But Mounier represents no way a mainstream. His personalism represents no way a mainstream, but it represents a point of reference in which these groups, Esprit, Information Catholique Internationale, La Vie Nouvelle, and the reason why La Vie Nouvelle is different is because it consists of regular people. These are businessmen, these are teachers, these are folks who don't feel the need to necessarily contribute articles to Catholic journals or really do anything beyond finding themselves at Mass every Sunday and behaving as some sort of Christian community. The movement comes out of the scouts, the French scouts, and the ethos is clear. But at the same time, they're still considering themselves personalists. So the guiding idea behind these voyages d'études to Eastern Europe is that these journeys will allow the rank-and-file members of La Vie Nouvelle, the leadership very rarely travel, the rank-and-file to experience daily life under socialism. Real socialism. So there's a spectrum of groups with which the Poles are coming into contact. Now, I want to outline quickly for you, just in case I go absurdly over. Sorry, what time do we actually start?
We started at about 10, 6:40.
Okay, all right.
You work your
time. All right. So in case I start to go on for too long, basic trajectory that I see in terms of the Polish Catholic intellectuals' international context. We begin with France, for the obvious reasons that I just stated, that the thought that inspires these contacts and the thought that inspires the Polish Catholic intellectuals to travel abroad is French. And this is also the thought that structures the discourse and the language and the assumptions of most of the groups within Western Europe with which the Poles initially have contact. The French groups that I already explained. In Belgium, the two major Catholic journals, La Revue Nouvelle, the Walloon journal, and Demant, the Flemish journal, as well as, and here is an analogy of sorts to the La Vie Nouvelle group in France, but a disanalogy that lets us sort of think of this group as representing more regular folk than committed esoteric texts. The International Federation of Christian Trade Unions that I mentioned, in which Kułakowski became deeply involved and quickly rose to the leadership, because Belgian labor, beginning in the late 1970s, really in the early 1970s, would prove to be one of the principal sources of international, or not principal, but one of the first sources of international support for workers. Every time workers would strike in Poland, the Belgian trade unions, and Jan Kułakowski would be one of the first voices to yell, hey, let's all get together and let's write a letter of solidarity to our Polish brothers. This begins with the contacts. Now, it's not, I don't necessarily mean to argue that this wouldn't have happened if this weren't a Christian trade union. Partly this is a matter of coincidence, how it happened that Polish emigre happened to rise quickly to the leadership of one of the principal Belgian trade unions and then happened to jump into the international mother confederation of that set of trade unions. But it's in this network because of that contact. Mazowiecki goes regularly and meets with these people in Brussels. When he sees the editor of La Revue Nouvelle and the editor of Demant, he meets also with regular members, rank and file, of the International Federation of Christian Trade Unions. So there's a firm groundwork established by the time that the late 1970s roll around, and there's a need for regular letters of solidarity on behalf of the Polish brethren. Forgive me. Next step is the Second Vatican Council, which, even though it may be the most important single event, well, not single, but broadly speaking, single event, among the ones that I mentioned in my talk, I will speak about the least, simply because if I started going into it, it would require too much detail. The Second Vatican Council, we need to leave it at this, I think, for now, is simply the transformative event of the Catholic Church. It becomes unique, singularly significant to Polish Catholicism because it creates breaches within Polish Catholicism with accusations that the primate, Wyszyński, does not subsequently do enough to adapt Polish Catholicism to the Second Vatican Council. This is a concern that could be raised all throughout Eastern Europe for any number of reasons. But the nutshell version of the Second Vatican Council's relevance here is that Polish Catholic intellectuals go there. They're involved. One of the principal Polish Catholic intellectuals involved there is the Archbishop Karol Wojtyła, who becomes quite important about 15 years later, and to whom we'll return momentarily. But Poland also has auditors, so-called lay auditors, coming from the Catholic intelligentsia movement, several journalists covering the Vatican Council events. So the Kiek folks know what happened at the Vatican Council, and they're in a position to go back to Poland and say in their meetings, closed-door meetings with Wyszyński, why aren't you doing this? This happened at the Second Vatican Council. We were there. We heard what the proclamations were. We even reported on them in Tygodnik Powszechny. Why aren't you doing this? And this becomes a major source of concern in the mid-1960s. 1965, the end of the Vatican Council coincides with the Polish bishop's letter to the German bishops, where they issue a famous phrase, we grant forgiveness and ask for it, which in Poland has been sort of refashioned to sound more stylish. Przebaczamy I prosimy przebaczenia. We forgive and ask for forgiveness. So that in and of itself actually signifies a certain transition, because on the one hand, the French personalism, along with the intelligentsia activity of the rank and file in La Vie Nouvelle in France and the labor unions in Belgium staples together different concerns for Poles traveling abroad in the late 1950s and early 1960s, creating a certain predisposition to expect an opening within Catholicism. Reading Mounier and Maritain is one of the principal activities that drives these Catholic journalists who leave Poland and go to cover the Second Vatican Council to certain expectations. And these are expectations that are enriched by conversations with Karol Wojtyła, who before becoming an auxiliary bishop in Kraków in 1958 was a rank and I mean, he was a priest, but he participated regularly in meetings of Tygodnik Powszechny, and he wrote regularly for Tygodnik Powszechny. So he's absolutely part of the circle. Out of the ethos, so the Second Vatican Council happens, there's a certain fulfillment on the part of the expectations of the Polish Catholic intellectuals, but it doesn't quite carry over into what they see in daily life in Poland, what they want to see there, what they believe should follow the letter and spirit of the constitutions of the Second Vatican Council. One of the first forms in which this is expressed in the international arena, and this is where the foreign policy quote from as perceived by the Bureau of Confessional Affairs becomes truly relevant, is on the question of Polish-West German reconciliation. The Oder-Nissa line is one of the definitive problems of normalizing post-World War II diplomatic relations and determining the boundaries in Eastern Europe. I don't think I need to go into the details, but it is the bishop's letter to the German bishops in 1965, which is actually an initiative taken by the Archbishop of Wrocław from lands that fall to the west of the old boundary of Poland and so are covered by the Oder-Nissa controversy. In fact, occasions a serious turmoil within the Polish church as the German episcopate fails to respond with any real urgency or any real substance to the Polish bishop's letter. As a result, there's a bit of a fragmentation of the conversation. A group of the Pax Christi from Germany, known as the Benzberger Kreis, so includes some famous intellectuals, Walter Dix, Eugen Kogon, consider it imperative to answer openly and enthusiastically the Polish bishop's letter from 1965. And so the Benzberger Kreis, by 1968, has become one of the main points of reference for the Polish hierarchy in Germany. But the Polish episcopate is not going to correspond with an ecumenical group of intellectuals in West Germany. So what happens is that the ball gets passed, so to speak, to the Znak and Kik movement. And this is where Mazowiecki, who actually, despite having significant contacts in Belgium, always considered German to be his best foreign language. This is where Bartoszewski, who, despite being generally engaged as a Catholic journalist in this movement, considered himself first and foremost wanting to agitate on behalf of inter-ethnic and international dialogue following from Auschwitz and his experiences there. This is where these threads come together, because there are several independent trajectories within the Znak-Kik movement that assemble into motor engines for Polish-German dialogue, for continued correspondence with the Benzberger Kreis, for individuals traveling to West Germany to meet with both CDU and SPD politicians. And it's difficult to classify or qualify precisely what the political ramifications of these contacts were in terms of achieving Polish-German normalization by 1970. But the best sort of impressionistic assessment one can give is to look at statements made subsequently by Willy Brandt, if we're talking about the older generation, or Richard von Weizsäcker, if we're talking about the younger generation. Von Weizsäcker is one of Mazowiecki's best friends still today. And these are individuals who were deeply embedded in the process of Polish-German reconciliation, and they will say that Mazowiecki, Stomma, Bartoszewski, and a couple of other key names from the Kik movement were responsible for making this transformation happen. Then the final stage, and this takes us to 1978, and I'm afraid I'm going on for too long, so I'll cut as soon as I make this last point, is that 1978 is a breaking point in many ways, not so much in the sense that, although obviously having a Polish pope changes the dynamics, potential dynamics for potential engagement by Catholic intellectuals in international affairs. Yes, that's true. At the same time, by the late 1970s, it's become increasingly difficult for the most sort of enthusiastic and the most personalistically inclined and engagé of the members of the Znak Kik movement to get permission to travel abroad. It's become clear, following these foreign policy assessments in the late 1960s, to both the Bureau of Confessional Affairs and the Ministry of the Interior in Poland, that these people are not just intellectuals reading esoteric texts and meeting people who don't matter. They can actually help make things happen. And at the very least, they have contacts that can undermine existing policy of the People's Republic of Poland. So there is a flirtation with a group run by Jan Zabłocki, who separates decisively after 1968 from Mazowiecki. It's another story for which we don't have time. But that flirts with creating a Christian democratic formation in Poland in the 1970s. It fails miserably. And one of the events that kills it is the series of protests in 1976, which leads to the formation of the Committee for the Defense of Workers. So if we look, strictly speaking, at the story of Polish Catholic intellectuals and its evolution from 1956 onward, yes, on the one hand, a lot of individuals turned out to be very important in different instances, but the movement itself began to peter out in the 1970s. As a movement, it wasn't necessarily gaining steam. In some respects, the People's Republic of Poland and internal rivalries had managed to push the movement to the side or to deflate its, slow its dynamics. That said, there are three things that are worth keeping in mind by the end of the 1970s. First, Karol Wojtyła had been responsible for personally supporting many of the travels, particularly to Belgium, where the Catholic University of Lublin and the Catholic University of Leuven had a formal exchange that was used as a cover for a lot of the travels by the Znak members to Belgium and then hopping along to other countries in Western Europe once they had their passports. So you know, Karol Wojtyła, as Archbishop or Cardinal, would actually write a personal letter of reference for each of these individuals who was traveling abroad. Obviously, when he becomes Pope, he's no longer going to do that. These are small affairs, but they change the dynamic a little bit. On some level, the Polish Catholic intellectuals lose their biggest domestic supporter and their biggest domestic cover when Karol Wojtyła becomes Pope. It's an element that one doesn't often consider, but this is, if one might say, the final nail in the coffin for the movement as such. Now, of course, the movement becomes a hub of dissident activity in 1980, but that's only because individual members of the movement, as individuals, go to Gdańsk and get involved. Mazowiecki, first and foremost, as the chief advisor to Lech Wałęsa. But he didn't go as vice president of the Warsaw Club. He went, and therefore the club became involved and became entangled. But second point, so the first point is that the Pope's departure actually had a significant negative impact on the movement as such. Second point is that by this time, there is a very, very different perception abroad of the Polish Catholic intellectuals. We've moved from French mentorship of Poles to let's see what the Poles are doing today. And in large part, this is sparked by events. 1968, 1970, 1976, and then 1980-81 come as the idea that there are protests that lead to either strikes or violence or, well, the 1980 comes as a shock, certainly. But the idea of unrest is not shocking, but the instantiation and the moments when it actually happens are quite shocking to the West European context. So much so that when in 1981, the then editor of Esprit, Paul Thibault, is actually in Warsaw when martial law is imposed. He is completely befuddled. And he writes a very, very impassioned article that appears in Esprit a month later, Mauvaise Neige, which is a brilliant read. But it shows you just how clueless, despite 30 years of contact with these Polish Catholic intellectuals, the Western Europeans are. What it doesn't necessarily show you, though, is how much the Poles have learned, in the sense that from reading the texts, from meeting with these people, from exchanging materials with them, and from actually physically being in the West, they have actually, I mean, at minimum, they've picked up what in Polish you'd call a warsztat, so, you know, a handbag of tools that you can use in all sorts of situations, which you wouldn't necessarily pick up from being just a regular deputy in the same of the Parliament of the People's Republic of Poland, but which these people do pick up. Then, let's see, final point. Let me just glance my notes. Final point. This deals again with the question of whether or not we can call these individuals' engagement political. Is it foreign policy? Is it politics at all? Is it naive to think that engagement can be apolitical or anti-political, whatever, depending if you buy into George Conrad's terminology? Is it foolish to think that there can be such a thing as international contacts when you're living in under a socialist regime that don't amount to a certain autonomous foreign policy? When you're traveling, when you're exchanging materials, even though there is censorship and even though nothing can be completely controlled, and in some instances, there's no attempt made to control. But at the same time, the steps that come out of the leadership of the Kiksnak movement show a willingness to try to tone down, at minimum, if not eliminate completely, the political aspects of this engagement. In other words, solidarity as a social movement, solidarity as a labor movement, not as a political movement. And this is something that returns in 1989 when Mazowiecki becomes prime minister, that in some ways is very helpful and wonderful for the new Poland, but completely buries the political formation that comes out of the mainstream of solidarity. And I'm very sorry for going on and on. So I'll stop it.
Thank you. This is the kind of talk that really makes people think, at least makes me think, about links of various kinds, about the transnational element. But first of all, just to establish the significance of this, I mean, what this really is about very much the end of the Cold War era. I mean, this is the prehistory of many of the things that we still do not fully understand in terms of how the Cold War ended. Now, you understand quite a bit what the role of Poland in that, we think. I sometimes think we don't fully, but we believe we do anyway. And that can be helpful in itself, sure, in terms of place, location. But this is more than that. I mean, it's about what comes after as well, to quite some extent. The point that we definitely do not understand is why in Poland, and to a lesser degree elsewhere in the eastern parts of Europe, out of seemingly very little comes a set of people with fairly clear ideas, not just about wanting to link up with something that is transnational, in your sense within a certain element, you know, group, yeah, broadly defined, but also in a much wider sense, and also the tools for doing it. I mean, this is the significance of it, and that significance is enormous because these are the kinds of stuff that we often, as in those of us who try to do international history, are not particularly good at grasping because of our preoccupation with state formations, with state repression. We want to talk about dissidents and we end up with the wrong dissidents because we follow the state. The state's preoccupation with dissidents. Many of these people wouldn't be dissidents. I mean, it's not a meaningful term in what you're talking about. Some of them would. Others would certainly would. And then there is, of course, the, as you pointed out, putting a name to that is very difficult. The quality aspect, as it were, of those links. I think I would call them networks. But they're networks of a kind. They're networks of a very different nature than what we normally would think of as networks based on common interest. Again, so much of what we think about with regard to these things is interest-driven, rather than sort of driven by, the kind of people that describe, particularly on the French side.
Do we call them moral economy?
Whatever. Engagement is a different term in this respect. It's not about solidarity, that's solidarization. Languages are getting mixed up here. It's not about that. It's not about having common interest. It's about sort of rubbing off from each other to some extent in terms of this broader sense of what the movements that they want to be part of consist of. So I have two questions. The first one is with regard to when you get into the 1970s. Because things do not just change in Poland post-1970, they also change in all of the countries that you're dealing with. And Belgium is a very good example in point. Now, do this change towards more interaction within Western Europe, which is the point that's often made with regard to Belgium, with regard to the Christian trade union movement in an international sense, and certainly made with regard to West Germany, does that to some extent come to overshadow these contexts? So that is the first one. Again, as you can imagine, this is a much bigger question as well. The bigger question is, does European integration in its various forms, writ large, come in the period during the European detente and leading up to the Polish events of 1980, come to overshadow these kinds of contexts that were created in an earlier era? Okay? That first. Then the second one is, in terms of specific ideas of organization, and this is something that we didn't touch on. How much of that is picked up on the Polish side? Because clearly there is a lot of debates on the Western side. And again, particularly during the 70s, but also during the 1960s, that it would be interesting to see how they are reflected in terms of what is then delivered on by the people who actually have these contacts.
The first question I would say is much easier to answer, which is to a large extent. We have to see what we talk about as European integration.
Obviously, in the broadest possible sense. We're not talking about the EU in terms of its mentality.
I haven't really devoted that much time to this because I'd go crazy if I did. But the European community, actually, there are connections between individuals in the Kiksnack movement and the process of European integration. So I actually don't think it's a trivial point. I simply have no basis to answer your question competently in that respect. But if we're talking broadly about European integration, then yes, absolutely. The West German element is enormously important. Mm. And the labor union issue, there are several aspects to the labor union issue. This is in many ways a Belgian phenomenon above all.
Yes.
Something that bizarrely actually manages to unite the Flemish and the Walloons. The fact of deconfessionalization in the late 60s and 1970s, certainly by 1980. So what used to be called the International Federation of Christian Trade Unions after 1969, is called the World Confederation of Labor. And this is something that just runs all through the world of Belgian labor, and this is something that actually makes for a very problematic point of interaction and contact here. And this is not an isolated phenomenon. So this is one of the shockwaves, one might call it, coming out of the Second Vatican Council, which actually one could generalize as a form of European integration. And I think that would be fair, because it affects political parties and labor unions and agrarian unions, etc., etc. It's not an isolated phenomenon. And it definitely has an impact. I think that it probably contributes to alienating I would say this, Mazowiecki, Turowicz, etc. The rank and file disagree significantly over this when we get to This is one place where the rank and file and the leadership start going different ways. So your engagement with an integrating Europe, I think, leads the people who have the most direct contact, more than the esoteric stuff from the 50s, much more controversial than personalism, to go their own way. And this is one of those centrifugal forces that does contribute to the degeneration of the movement as a movement. So you're absolutely right to point that out as a larger force. The question of Polish-German reconciliation has its own dynamic, because contact with West Germany is very hard to fit. I mean, I have this problem when thinking about how to typologize everything in my work. It's hard to fit all of this on the same page, because I'd be an idiot to say that Polish-German reconciliation was motivated by Emmanuel Mounier. I mean, you can make an argument that there's some sort of indirect connection. I think that's been part of what I've said, but that's not the point at all. So this is a question of international and inter-ethnic dialogue, and in some cases inter-confessional dialogue as well. And that does overshadow a lot of the daily activities, because instead of talking about theology, and instead of talking about how we pastoral behavior and how we integrate the gospel into our daily lives in the meetings of the Polish Catholic key clubs, you find much more discussion of, okay, what do we think of these terms of the Treaty of Normalization between Poland and the Federal Republic of Germany? So, yeah, it definitely, that more than anything else, the Polish-German issue does politicize, sort of, malgré soi, the Catholic intelligentsia clubs. So it's a huge point. I have to think a little bit more about how I want to fit that a little bit more elegantly into the overall narrative, because it's not there. It's part of the overall story, obviously, but the shockwave that Polish-German reconciliation causes interrupts the narrative. That you that you summarized so well of the dissidents on the one hand, maybe sometimes the state agencies in Eastern Europe were right, but often they were completely off the mark, or they didn't care to look at the right people in terms of who was doing what. You know, there was this language of thinking of the Kiek engagement abroad in terms of foreign policy beginning in the late 1960s, but several of these people kept getting passports, even after they stopped being parliamentary deputies, Mazowiecki among them, and Bartoszewski. I mean, okay, so there are extenuating circumstances. Lehmann came to Poland in 1973 and said, please give Bartoszewski a passport. So it would have been an affront to him not to, to give the passport. Anyway, sorry. That's a long answer to a short question. Second question, specific ideas of organization. If you could give me just a clear sense of what you'd like me to answer.
Well, I'm particularly interested in the relationship between intellectuals and workers. I mean, there are many of them that I'm interested in. But that's a particular one. And again, I mean, as I said, when you move into the 1970s, you see in a number of countries that this, in part because of the pressures from the left, I mean, the various aspects of the left, take on much more of a significance among Christian Democrats, very, very broadly.
Right.
So I was wondering how that rubbed off in the Polish.
Well, I would say, just in terms of the material that I covered in the talk, that there's a certain sensitivity developed among some of... My answer would have to touch upon a broader issue, which is how representative sociologically within the individual clubs are those who travel to certain destinations, right? Because, okay, we can say that almost everyone traveled somewhere, but it makes a difference whether you go to Belgium and talk with workers from Christian labor unions, or if you go to France and hang out on an island in the Mediterranean near Corsica. It's not the same experience at all, and it impacts the models of organization very differently. So I would say for Mazowiecki, it's formative.
Yeah.
It's absolutely seminal, the point that you raised, that without having gone to Brussels regularly and been able to, particularly his friendship with Jan Kułakowski, emblazoned on his mind a model of organization that made solidarity almost automatic for him. I mean, who was he to know how a labor union should be organized? You know, he never finished college. His only professional activities were limited to editing articles about theology and Catholic philosophy. But he had practical on-the-ground experience from these conversations that actually came back. So here, this becomes a question of specific cases, I would say.
That's very good. Others? Svetlana first.
Well, thank you very much, Joseph, for a very interesting presentation.
Thanks.
And inspiring, particularly on the question of this exchange, intellectual exchanges, and how this helps in creating a momentum and dynamic. Changing the dynamics within the Cold War. Two things that I would like to ask you.
Sure.
One is the involvement of Vatican, which you didn't touch upon.
Sure.
And there is, in and around, you're talking about Wojtyla being the sponsor all times, and by the time he goes to Rome, you know, they're losing, as you said, they're losing the sponsor. So
absolutely.
In what way? Mm-hmm. And also, all these intellectuals do travel, they interact under an umbrella of Catholicism. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there isn't anything else. I mean, they on the one hand, you say that some of them being basically left-oriented, but still, they're engaging and talking to Western Europe under this umbrella, and this is helping. And the second question is perhaps related to this one. And you, Jeremy, use that they, by the time solidarity is created, they move over individual. That there isn't really any correlation, or there isn't a joint motivation or raison for them to move towards solidarity. Mm-hmm. Now that is puzzling to me, because by that time, more or less, they are opposition to the government.
Could I do Artemis' question as well, since we are running slightly short of time? Artemis.
thank you, also, for your talk. Forgive me, these are sort of way out of left here, because this is not my topic. But since you were talking about sort of their foreign policy, I mean, you talked mostly about these networks, and they seem to always be facing the West. But I wonder, as they sort of form their worldview in terms of what's going on outside of Poland, do they have a position on Catholics in the Soviet Union? What can be done for them? Or are they just completely ignored? Do they have any thoughts? I mean, do they have any relations with the Polish diaspora in the United States? Or do they just say there are no intellectuals in the United States? It's not like, talking to them. And also, your comment on, you said that they said, at least out loud, that socialism is the best setting for Christianity.
Sure.
Is this genuine, and does this reflect sort of Catholic criticism of modern capitalism, or is this just something to say to sort of stay safe?
Yeah, we could take those and let me see if there are more questions.
Okay. Yeah. All right, so in order. Thanks for the questions. In terms of the role of the Vatican, I just wouldn't have had time to start a separate conversation on this. But it's a very good question, because Mounier, for example, was never popular in the Vatican. So if we're talking about inspiration from personalism, we have to be very precise. Maritain, who was the godfather to most Christian democratic parties in Western Europe immediately following World War II, was on the Vatican Index until mid-1950s. Pius XII hated Maritain's guts. So it wasn't until Pius XII essentially died and John XXIII came to power as Pope that Maritain himself got rehabilitated. So to be a personalist was in some ways a priori to be at odds with the mainstream line of the Vatican. Before the Second Vatican Council, this is no surprise, because these are Catholics who are agitating for openness and who are saying, we like socialism, and we want to integrate Catholicism with socialism. After the Second Vatican Council, of course, is a completely different story. And this is one instance in which I didn't go into this at all, but there is an organization called the World, what is it in English? World Council of Laity. I'm back translating from Polish, so I'll have to check the formal name in English. But essentially, that's it. We're talking about lay Catholics who are assembling congresses every so often as a consequence of the Second Vatican Council. And the Polish delegation in 1967 in particular is the largest delegation at the Congress. So Paul VI has a very tight relationship with the Polish delegation. Now, in fact, Paul sponsored personally, Pope Paul, the participation of a professor from Lublin named Stefan Świerzewski, who was one of the most prominent neo-Thomists in 20th century Europe, to this Congress, and often actually wrote multiple letters intervening with the Ministry of the Interior when they started making trouble for Świerzewski's departure. That said, especially beginning in 1966, with the open criticism on the part of the Znak movement of the line taken by Primate Wyszyński, basically boiling down to the fact that Wyszyński wasn't implementing the Second Vatican Council decisions fast enough, it turned out that there was actually a very brief period of overlap in terms of interest, let's say institutionally or politically speaking, between the Vatican and these Polish Catholic intellectuals. Even though they were on the same page theologically and philosophically following 1965, in terms of institutional interests, the Vatican really sort of dropped out of the picture after about 2 years. So let's say 65 to 67 is when they get the most support from the Vatican. Aside from that, they're essentially on their own. Is that a good answer to your first question?
No, I could go on.
You know, I've spent so much time studying these individuals that I could narrate all their life stories, so I don't want to bore you.
Thank you very much.
No, my pleasure. Second point. This is an excellent question. And to be perfectly frank with you, I'm taking a bit of a provocative line in terms of saying that there's no automatic translation, that members of KIK go into solidarity, simply because that's what one would generally expect, and that's what I, on some level, think is the case. So those members of KIK who go into solidarity because they were members of KIK. They say to themselves, personally, individually, this is the next step in my engagement. So for Mazowiecki, for Bogdan Cywiński, for Stanisław Stoma, for Andrzej Bielowiejski, for a list of others, it's not the majority or even a third or something of the rank of the total membership. So I can't say that KIK translates into solidarity. Now, most of the members of KIK end up joining solidarity one way or another just because everybody joins solidarity, at least in name, in 1980-81, right? So 10 million is the number most often cited by Lech Wałęsa, among others, in particular. So just joining the union doesn't mean that you go into the leadership. Those from KIK who went into solidarity at the very beginning and helped to form it were in the leadership, and that was because that's what they believed they had to do at this point. The 70s were a time of evolution for them, from just being restricted to these more sort of esoteric or marginal questions to engaging themselves at the forefront of what was going on in Polish society. So the answer to your question is that there is a correlation, but I don't think it can be generalized. But it's definitely, I didn't mean to suggest that it played no role at all. It's a case-by-case issue, if I can leave it at that. So,
let's jump in for 1 second.
Please.
And is it correct to assume then that the Second Vatican Council was crucial for this future engagement of these key members into the leadership of the solidarity?
Well, yes and no.
Because you said that it was before the Second Vatican Council, the idea of working within socialism was prevalent for many of these.
But You don't just say indirectly, right?
I mean, indirectly at best. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, you know, if we're talking about language of working within socialism, solidarity was supposed to work within socialism, right? I mean, here we're moving out of a conversation about the Catholic intellectuals, but the structure of solidarity movement was... Bronislav Geremek once told me that the main source of inspiration for the model developed by him and Mazowiecki was Edvard Abramovsky's stateless socialism doctrine from the late 19th century. So, you know, it's not that they're divorcing themselves from socialism. The Second Vatican Council, I mean, yes, in a sense, but I don't think the Second Vatican Council was at all a necessary condition for that kind of engagement. This is one of those things that I can't answer for sure, obviously, since it involved a massive counterfactual. But I think I would conjecture, if we're assuming that the personalism of that these individuals developed and grew over the years was principally responsible for their engagement first in the Geek movement, and then by way of the Geek movement in opposition, I don't think they needed to have the church sanction it. Obviously, when the church came to the aid of unemployed workers or families of imprisoned solidarity members in the 1980s, obviously that made these people happy. But by and large, they were in prison themselves. So that might end up being a side issue.
Well, that's Jimmy's question. Is there anything more that you wanted to add? I mean, did you want to follow on?
Let us take
just a couple of quick yes. A couple of very quick. Vani.
Yeah, I thought you were in.
No, I'm not closing yet. I will in about 5 minutes.
No, yeah. It's just like more of curiosity. Did you come across some sort of relation within this group of intellectuals and the left wing sectors of Italian Christian Democratic Party?
Absolutely.
I'm particularly interested because in Italy we have this, I don't know if I could say peculiar phenomenon, but there is this strongly socialist movement within the Christian Democratic Party that in the 1970 evolves around Baltucci and this journal that actually still exists with these testimonianze.
Yes.
And there are strong similarities, no, between the position of this group and this cultural tendency and political tendency. I don't know if you can say something more on this.
Do you want to take any?
I think anyone else who wants to come in at this point. I think we just have a response.
Okay.
To that.
So I'll go backwards.
That can be a short or a long answer. I know that. But choose the short one.
The short answer is absolutely. The principal name would be Giorgio Lapira, in terms of the context. Lapira went to Poland twice in the 1960s, hosted by Kik. Also, Kik received members of the Focolari and the Testimonianze editorial group. So, you know, I didn't include Italy here simply because it didn't fit nicely into this narrative of personalism and peace, even though the positions of a lot of the Testimonianze editorial staff do follow from the same line. If you want to talk about Italy afterward, I'm happy to. It's just that I figured I would go on as long as I did anyway. But Italy, to be perfectly honest with you, has another significance, and I know I promised to be short, but this is where the Democrazia Cristiana ends up being the hub for a lot of emigre Christian democratic groups that survive into the late 50s and even the 1960s. I didn't go into this, but a lot of the money for the first trips abroad, because this is an important question to ask, where do these groups get the money to travel, initially comes from it's CIA money funneled through Democrazia Cristiana to these groups in Poland, or rather, I'm sorry, to the West European groups that formally invite and then state in their invitations that they will pay for these voyages. So Democrazia Cristiana is important also in that practical sense, very much so. The questions, first is worldview formation, and then Catholics in the USSR or USA. USSR, there's no, Well, I mean, there are some conversations about diaspora. So if we're talking about, let's say, uniates in Belarus or uniates in Ukraine, absolutely. Although, the problem is everyone always knows that the secret police are listening in. So,
better not.
This is one of those topics that, for whatever reason, drops off the table because it's so obviously going to bother so many different people. And so, in terms of public discussion, it's very seldom advertised. Now, this falls obviously under the aegis also of, let's say, subgroups working on ecumenical issues.
Yes.
And that does happen. The 70s are really the time when this sort of comes up. But it's not part of the mainstream conversations, really, ever. The USA is complicated. Yes, there are Catholic intellectuals in the USA. And a couple of the Poles from the Znak and Kik actually go to the USA. Problem is that almost no one ever gets passports for travel to the USA. Mm. So just, you know, for practical reasons, it can never play as big of a role as Western Europe. I'd like to think that the West would be an appropriate term, but just in terms of representativeness and you know, number of travels, it doesn't work out. Last question. Socialism is best for Catholicism. Is that a genuine sentiment? Absolutely, for some of them. Those who... I don't think I can concretely point to examples of individuals who, let's say, into the mid-50s were lying about the belief that Catholicism and socialism would be best harmonized. It's more a function of how realistic you were, in the sense of, were you a naive idealist who thought, wow, there's a striking resemblance between Catholicism as an ideology and socialism as an ideology. I believe in the gospel. I am a Catholic. Ergo, it makes sense that I live under a socialist regime. Great. Or those who say, come from the other direction and say, socialism is here. I don't really oppose it. I'm Catholic. Let me think about a way to make this make sense. Both tendencies are present. Those who are truly opposed to socialism, and there are some in the Kik movement, and most of them come from the old Christian Democratic Party that was broken up and whose members were imprisoned but then amnestied or released in 55 and 56, make their opposition known. And they're very ornery, and they either get cast out of the movement or leave themselves. Well, no, they don't really get cast out. They leave themselves. In some cases, they go into emigration. In some, they just go off into silence.
Thank you very much, Piotr.